Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Yo, what's good, New York? I'm Jack Devine, he, him pronouns, and you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute back live on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're a socialist radio show and podcast for members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The DSA is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 56,000 members nationwide, and NYC DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. Before we begin, that was a shout-out from last week, so we're not going to cover that again. Sorry about that. But today, despite strong climate rhetoric from Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, billions of dollars of fracked gas infrastructure is still being built in New York State and New York City. Today, we'll be talking with the guest version of RPM's Lee Zishi, who has been on the ground as communities fight to stop a massive fracked gas power plant and prevent corporate utilities, Con Ed, and National Grid from raising our rates to build fracked gas pipelines, including one right now in Bushwick. But first, just a brief live reading of the headlines brought to you by The Thorn. The NYPD crackdown on the subway quality of life issues continues to have disastrous results. This week saw fallout from the arrest of a woman for selling churros, a homeless woman being assaulted by police officers in Queens, and a ticket for putting up Post-its. A protest in Harlem against the subway crackdown resulted in more than 58 arrests. New York City council staffers have formally launched a union drive. Roughly 150 employees have already signed on to the effort, and organizers are hoping to organize roughly 600 staff members in total, including both central staff and those who work directly for council members. The union, known as the Association for Legislative Employees, will be unaffiliated to avoid potential conflicts of interest with labor unions. And that's it for our daily headlines, which are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by NYC DSA Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethorn.nyc. And before we dive into today's topic, since we've been discussing so much what's going on in Latin America, I just wanted to give a shout out to the uprising that has now spread to Colombia, where people there are out on the streets fighting back against the austerity government, saying Chao Duque to their right-wing leader. So that's something that we'll continue to cover on this show, but we are going to be focused on the organizing that is going on against fossil fuel capital here in New York. And we have Lee Zishi, our climate change organizer extraordinaire, to discuss the issues at hand. So what went down this weekend in Cricket Valley? What was the Cricket Valley power plant, and what went down there this last weekend?
Yeah. So it was actually the weekend before, on the November 16th.
We had the preview last week on the show.
Yeah, last week we had some, live coverage of the sound of what was happening there. So the Cricket Valley frack gas power plant, it's located about an hour and a half north of New York City, in Dutchess County in Dover Plains, New York. It is just this massive, massive frack gas power plant. So in New York State, we said that fracking wasn't safe. We weren't going to do it. It was going to contaminate people's water, their air. But we're still bringing in all this gas from Pennsylvania. So this plant is 1,100 megawatts, which is just, again, I said, like, massive is the best way to describe it when you're standing there on the ground looking at it. And Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant is supposed to retire soon. And so the whole kind of excuse of the fossil fuel industry is, well, we're retiring this energy, this massive source of energy, this nuclear power plant, and renewables aren't ready yet. surprisingly, since fossil fuels have been subsidized so heavily, but they are, the technology is there. We need this massive power plant instead. So it was approved 12 years ago before we knew a lot about the climate science on frack gas. We know that methane, the main component of gas, is just as bad, if not worse, sometimes 86 to 106 times worse than CO2, which is, you know, the greenhouse gas we talk a lot about. And this was also approved before New York State passed, you know, groundbreaking climate legislation, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. So the local community is very worried about the local pollution that will come from this plant. It's located in the Harlem Valley. They always seem to put these massive power plants in these, you know, regions where the pollution coming out is just going to be trapped. And people are also really worried about the climate impacts. And also, you know, it's a $1.5 billion investment, you know, from companies like BlackRock. A lot of the investors are, you know, from not, you know, American companies. And so the local community has been opposing it. It's been a tough fight because it's a very rural area. But starting back in January, there was a blockade of the construction equipment coming in. It was actually pretty funny. Like, I did the first episode of RPM that I hosted and then went to go cover that event, where these four farmers, pulled a tractor in front of a construction, big shipment coming through.
So we've gone full circle now.
Yes. Yeah. So now, you know, the end of the year coming around, this plant is getting even closer now. It's almost complete. They've actually had certain parts up and running, doing tests on it, but it's supposed to fully go online, next year. They claim the power is going to be coming to New York City. So the local community has been, organizing to stop it. And last Saturday on November 16th, kind of continuing that tractor blockade theme, this bright neon green tractor was pulled up in the very early morning hours to blockade the morning shift of construction workers from going in. And four people actually scaled the 275-foot tall smokestacks, you know, this gigantic smokestack that the community is very worried about, like, pollution just spewing from if this thing is up and running. And so I actually, after this whole event went down, the entire plant was shut down for the day. Workers were sent home, and the activists on the ground actually opened it up, the blockade, so that the daytime, you know, the workers who had been working the night shift could go home. You know, we didn't want to trap them inside the plant all day, because, you know, this isn't against the workers. This is against the people at the very top who are going to be making money off this disastrous plant.
So the owners, not the people who are, like, producing the wealth through their labor, that they're forced in this position, and we support a just transition for their lives.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when those workers were leaving, people were singing to them, actually saying, with you, for you, on your side, you know, and saying, you know, this is about a just transition. This isn't against you. And a lot of those workers even have no idea actually how unsafe the gas being burned at this plant will be. You know, they have no idea what they're being exposed to. They're being told it's clean natural gas. They have no idea that there's radon in this gas, that there's fracking chemicals in this gas. So this is definitely not against those workers. You know, this is against the people at the top. And yeah, so after the, you know, I was there on the ground, you know, tweeting about it and videotaping some of it and watching this whole thing unfold. And after this week, I met up with Monica Hunkin, who was one of the four people that actually climbed the smokestack. Two of the people were those farmers that had locked down earlier in the year to a tractor. And Monica, we just talked about, you know, what it was like to be up there. And so this is the conversation I had with Monica Hunkin.
So I'm here with Monica Hunkin, who is one of four people who climbed the smokestack tower at Cricket Valley Frack Gas Power Plant. Can we start, Monica, by just kind of talking, like, what that day was like for you? And, you know, you wrote up this really great Facebook post about it. Can you kind of talk us through some of it and what it was like?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Lee. So we started very early that morning. Well, we really started days, weeks, months before, but at 5 a.m. we started to go into the plant, and I can't discuss how we got in, but it was relatively easy to walk in, which shows you how poor their security is. And we had some struggle trying to find the right entry point to the smokestacks, to the ladder. It took us some time. We had to avoid some workers along the way, and then we finally found it, and we started climbing up. And when we emerged out of the warehouse space and got to the first catwalk, we looked down and we saw all of our comrades and friends there blocking the entrance, locked down to a bright neon green tractor and no police presence just yet. And people were starting chanting already and drumming, and we heard that echoing throughout Harlem Valley. And we felt just thrilled and amazed that we were able to make it so far. And we started going up, and it was freezing cold, and we started to hear people yelling at us. They had spotted us as soon as the sun was starting to rise. And about four workers were barreling up the ladder really fast. They didn't have big bags on like we did, and 12 layers of clothing. So they were coming up and chasing us, and which was a little scary because, you know, we're 200 feet in the air at that point, still climbing up. Creek and I stopped on one of the platforms and decided to talk to the workers and de-escalated them and told them that we weren't coming down and that we were part of a peaceful protest and that it wasn't against them. We weren't going to destroy any property and that we were going to stay for the day and shut it down. And that was that. And so they left us, first confiscating our toilet bucket, which we had on the platform below us, which was discomforting. And then we made it up to the top and we started to unfurl some streamers that we had sewn and attached to the top of the platform. And we were very careful in everything that we did laying out. We didn't want anything to fly out into construction. And then we stayed there for 12 hours, tried to deploy a banner, but due to budgeting issues, we did not have the adequate material that we needed, the fabric that would be strong enough and safe enough. And we were very concerned about safety, so we ended up not deploying the banner that we had. And we're just there watching the great swamp and the changes in the day and listening to our friends below and their protest unveil. And it was astounding and terrifying.
And what led you to take this action?
Well, as someone who is a resident of New York City that is meant to supposedly be benefiting from the fracked gas through the Iroquois pipeline that's going through this power plant, I feel that it's my responsibility to stand up and say that I won't let people be sacrificed. I won't let people's safety or their lives or their health or their land or their environment, the precious farmland that's there, the indigenous land that's there, be compromised in any way because of gas that we don't actually need.
And I saw you all had a message from Governor Cuomo, for Governor Cuomo, way up there on the top. What did you want to say to him?
We just demanded that he stop all fracking infrastructure, that he really live up to this legacy of being a climate hero that he thinks, that he touts and says that he is, but he hasn't taken so many actions that he needs to take. He has taken some brave action in shutting down like the LNG Port Ambrose and has come out against the Williams pipeline. But he has allowed this to go through, and this was passed years ago when we had no ban on fracking. And so technically it's illegal. And there's no way that he should allow New Yorkers to pay the price so that foreign investors, big banks, BlackRock, and gas companies can stand to make a profit off of other people's lives. It's not just, it's not right.
And so last night you had your first appearance in front of a judge. Can you tell us what happened last night?
Yeah, it was, most of us, of the 29 that were arrested, were there and made our appearance in night court, which I had never been to, 6 p.m., out in Dover. And the judge, Judge Abrams, does not seem to be friendly to our cause, and he made very strong charges for us. So for the four of us that were climbing, we are being faced with 30 days in jail, and everyone else who did the tractor blockade down below is facing 50 hours of community service that must be served in Dutchess County, which will be difficult because people were coming from across the river, from Kingston, from Poughkeepsie, from New Paltz, from Brooklyn, from New York City, from everywhere. And then also that we have a stay of 1,000 feet that we can't stand within 1,000 feet of the power plant, which means that we can't even go past it on Metro North. Metro North is just a few feet from the plant. There's just this thin line of trees blocking it. There's no protection there. Route 22 goes right along there. We, you know, if we drive past, then we would be within that that frame. So for people that live there, like Ben Schwartz, who is a farmer that also did this climb, he lives 2 miles away on his farm on White Pine. And that will be incredibly difficult to manage. So I think people were a bit shocked, but we have a great lawyer, Dave Dorfman, representing us. And he said that he's going to do everything he can. And so we're going to be in it. We're going to be in this fight for a long time, not just in the legal battle, but also continuing to pressure Cuomo, continuing to ask for another environmental impact statement, because things have changed, things have shifted in how we're addressing climate and emissions and in New York State. And if we want to reach our climate goals, we have to shut it down right now. So they're not going to scare us by slapping a 30-day sentencing, even though that does scare me a little bit, honestly. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop fighting this. We have to fight.
Can you talk a little bit, too, about, you know, the strategy that went behind this? You have a very, you know, long and rich history of doing different direct actions, you know, against different fossil fuel, you know, companies and infrastructure. You know, what's the role of direct action? And, you know, there's a lot of people getting more involved in the climate crisis and the fight right now. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So unfortunately, I read some of the comments on our videos and things from the action, which you should never do. But people were saying that we were being impolite and disrespectful by doing this action. And I think that there is a place in society for politeness, but we're at a point now where we're in a state of emergency, and that all of the public hearings and all the avenues that are made available to people to make their complaints and to say, no, we think this is unsafe for us, and that we're the ones that have to suffer the consequences to this plant being put in our land, in our homes, those are gone to us now. We don't have any other options. Cuomo has to be the one to shut this down. There's no place for us to write a comment. There's no place for us to make a petition that's going to have any effect at this point. We've been polite. We've played a long game. We've done all of the things. And this is the point when this is the tool of the people. This is when direct action comes up, because it's what we have left. And it's what people around the world are doing. People are standing up in Hong Kong, in Chile, in Colombia now, and they're fighting for their rights and fighting against fascism. And they're doing it in ways where they're putting their bodies on the line, because they know how high the stakes are and how time is running out. And so we're not doing anything violent. We're not doing anything to compromise the safety of workers. We're fighting for the workers as well. We're fighting for all the people. And we're doing this in a way that's smart and strategic and effective.
Yeah, and do you feel like, you know, what was set out to was accomplished on that day?
We set to block the plant for the day. We set to the tractor blockade had a goal of 8 hours, and they did that exactly, which was amazing. And we had the goal of 12 hours, and we did that exactly. And we came down on our own accord, and everyone was arrested. Almost everyone was arrested peacefully. One police officer did end up hurting one person who was arrested before a supervisor stepped in. But everyone was safe. No one got severely injured. And people came out that night from being arrested. We got a lot of press and getting the word out on Democracy Now! And all of these other media, local media venues and national media venues. And that's what we want. And now we've had 300 calls to Cuomo already since the action, which was just a few days ago. So people are coming out and telling him to shut it down. We're raising funds for this to continue our fight. We're planning our next steps. We've mobilized people from across Harlem Valley, from across upstate, from bridging people from groups in New York City and there. We've made this collective that began kind of ragtag with no one official organization at the forefront, and it's remained very collective and gotten stronger in its grassrootsness. So I feel very happy and very proud to have been part of it, and think it's an amazing group of people that are completely humble and generous and committed and willing to take big risks like this.
Well, that was a really great interview at what's happening up in Cricket Valley, and we'll keep paying attention, and I'm sure Lee will keep a focus on the struggles that are happening there in Cricket Valley and then really across New York when it comes to the challenges to fight against fossil capital. And we'll have more in the rest of the episode, but I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. Connect with us after the show. You can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that at our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about the on-the-ground organizing that's happening against fossil capital and for eco-socialism. And what makes, you know, WBAI such a special institution is that it broadcasts the work that organizers are doing in these critical struggles, these crucial fights that are happening against factions of the capitalist class that are doing everything they can to maintain their power, despite the fact that the continued perpetuation of fossil fuel production will lead to the deaths of billions of people over the upcoming decades and centuries. That these stakes are existential. And the corporate media doesn't want to talk about this. They'll maybe mention climate change a few times a year when there's a big storm, and even then they hesitate bringing it up because they're getting donations and advertising money from those same very profiteers of death. But we don't do that here at WBAI. The money is coming from you, the listener. And so we really, really need your support. And this is about more than just a single issue or a single show. This is about developing working class media institutions that are capable of fighting back against corporate media and the sort of vulture capital that is day by day liquidating all the independent media voices. So we're part in this struggle right now. So if you want to, you know, show your solidarity with a show like Revolutions Per Minute, where, you know, we're a group of organizers associated with DSA and bringing on people who are engaged in these fights in multiple spheres, go to give the number two WBA.org. That's give to WBA.org and sign up and be a buddy of our show. You can click that Revolutions Per Minute is your favorite show on BAI and you want to be, you know, part of the community that is supporting us, supporting the institution. And then when you do that, you really become part of the BAI community. If you are someone who contributes a certain amount every year, just $25, you become a voting member of the WBAI community. You have representation on the local station board. I am one of the six staff representatives on the local station board. There are a lot of great people on that board who are really fighting for a independent media that is democratically managed, that is not privately controlled and representing the interests of capital and empire. You can also, you know, call in at the pledge line if you want to give more money than just becoming a buddy. You can call in 516-620-3602. Again, that's 516-620-3602. Or you can text the letters WBAI to the number 41444. Again, that's text the letters WBAI to the number 41444. Become part of the WBAI community and help in this fight against the capitalist class and their desire to control the message that is being put out and injected into people's ears every single day. So we have another clip for you. It's not just these big power plants like Cricket Valley that are being built. Con Edison is also proposing to build more frack gas infrastructure that is going to be poisoning your community. So here's Sarah Lyons with NYC DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group last week speaking about the need for public power before a hearing on the Con Ed rate case.
Con Edison was would have you believe that they can have it all, that they would like you to believe that they can have it both ways, that we can have a livable planet and they get to keep their money. But we know that that's not true. Con Edison has thwarted efforts to make green power a priority in New York City and in New York State, and Con Edison has continuously busted unions and union organizing because it knows that a renewable future and the rights of its workers are in a direct opposition to its shareholders and its bottom line. As socialists, we do not believe in participating in a system we see as illegitimate and deadly to the survival of this planet. And I'm sure many people right here feel the same way.
Yeah.
We do not believe in participating in an illegitimate system. And instead, we choose to propose a different system. We dare to decommodify our energy because, like I said, we know that public power is one of the best ways that we can get to a renewable future. We know that profit motive is one of the biggest things standing in the way of moving away from carbon-based fossil fuels. We dare to decommodify our energy to take the profit motive out of survival, to democratize, to give people and communities a say in where their energy comes from, and to decarbonize, to move away from frack gas infrastructure for good. We demand public power now. We demand to have a renewable energy system, a safe energy system that our communities have a say in, that we are able to have control over, that is decommodified and is without a profit motive standing in the way of moving towards a renewable energy future. So thank you so much, and demand public power now.
So we just heard from the great DSA organizer Sarah Lyon speaking about public power before a hearing on the Con Ed rate case. So Lee, what was that hearing all about?
So in New York City, we have two major corporate utilities and they have monopoly status, right? Because it wouldn't make sense to have like competing pipelines in the ground, sort of. You know, this is the capitalist, weird, bureaucratic logic behind this, all right? And so since they are a monopoly status, they're supposed to put, if they want to spend our money, right? Like that's how they build new pipelines. They have to raise our rates, raise our monthly energy bills. And there's a government entity called the Public Service Commission that has to then approve these plans. And so for months now, Con Edison has been in settlement negotiations. These are closed door settlement negotiations that happen between the company and you can file as a party. And so, you know, I do part-time organizing with a group called Sane Energy Project. We have been in the room, and I can't talk about what's been happening in these closed-door settlement negotiations, but I can tell you it's like mostly a bunch of lawyers in suits. You know, they have representatives from the state, representative from the city, big, you know, interests that people who use a lot of electricity. And for months, they've been going back and forth about, you know, how much they're going to be raising our rates and what that money is going to be spent on. And a couple weeks ago, they came to an agreement. They call it a joint proposal, and that has now been filed. And so, you know, Sane Energy and other environmental groups, including the DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group, very much opposes this plan that's on the table. One, because it raises our rates, and we're already paying some of the highest rates in the country. But also, it spends almost $1 billion every single year on frack gas infrastructure. So this meeting was before a judge to kind of hear people's cases on this before he makes a recommendation to the Public Service Commission, which will either approve or deny this plan that says that does things like it wants to expand a pipeline in the Bronx. Con Ed wants to expand a pipeline in Queens. They want to expand a pipeline in Manhattan. They also want to spend almost, I think it's something like close to $400 million every year ripping up our streets and replacing pipeline that's leaking. Most of their pipeline is leaking because it's old. So instead of like replacing it with renewable energy, what we need to do, they want to lock us into this system. So that was that meeting that was happening last week. And, you know, DSA was there to say, you know, all this is insane. We should just have public power.
You highlighted something really interesting that made me think about the contradiction between like bourgeois ideology, bourgeois theory and practice. How the capitalist class will love to tell you how much they love competition, but in their real hearts of hearts, what they really want is monopoly. They want to control the means of production and be able to charge the rates that they desire. And what's so critical for them is to have a relationship with the state apparatus and influence it so that it takes their side. So what has been the position of the state and then also the city in these negotiations?
Yeah, so the Department of Public Service has been one of these parties that have been negotiating, and I'd say probably the most powerful party in all of this. And, you know, there, so even though New York just passed the CLCPA, which says we need to look at all of the greenhouse gas emissions of any infrastructure we're building, they've been kind of like kicking the can down the road, right? They're like, well, we don't exactly know what the CLCPA means yet. They've dismissed our arguments about that that we made in testimony and in opposition to this joint proposal. And it's just really this incrementalism. Like, they really still think that there's going to be these magical market solutions that are going to solve climate change. They don't want to rock the boat. You know, their job for a very long time has just been to, you know, maybe scale back a little bit how much these corporate utilities get to make. And, you know, their entire job is supposed to be representing the public interest. But they definitely are not listening to climate science on this. And it's just been really disappointing for New York State to not make it clear that, you know, frack gas is not going to be our future. And New York City, the mayor's office is also represented in this case, and they've been pretty disappointing as well. You know, so Con Ed has this plan to replace leak-prone pipe. And one of the things that New York City asked for in their testimony was, hey, make sure that leak-prone pipe that's in the floodplain gets replaced first. So, you know, they're like,
what a tough demand.
Well, it's like you're recognizing that climate change is a problem and that a lot of our critical infrastructure is going to be flooded, but you're allowing them to invest something like $300-400 million a year extending the life of this infrastructure. And, you know, there's a couple like studies that have come out in the joint proposal about like, well, how do we, you know, depreciate the value of these assets, right? So they're spending hundreds of millions of our ratepayer dollars on these pipelines that are supposed to last 40, 50, 80 years. But if we, you know, listen to the CLCPA and basic climate science, like, we should be retiring these pipelines in 10, 15 years. So then how do they get paid for? You know, does that all end up on our bill like the next day? And also, you know, as you have rich people who are able to kind of start buying themselves out of fossil fuels, you know, they're the ones who are able to install geothermal right now or put solar panels on the roof. It means all these stranded assets are going to be put off on like the poorest and like the low income communities that don't have the way of just buying themselves out of the fossil fuel industry. So both, you know, New York State and New York City have been incredibly disappointing in this rate case when you have Governor Cuomo pretending to be this great climate leader who's standing up to utilities. De Blasio, you know, claims New York City is like leading the nation on these things, but they're, you know, just approved a plan that's going to spend the next 3 years of our money still going in the wrong direction. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, they can't escape like the neoliberal mindset where there's like there is no alternative in their mind, that this is the only way that things can be done. I mean, they're in their position as politicians because they serve those interests, so maybe for themselves personally there is some truth to that, but it's a lot easier for them to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. And you've hinted at what DSA's position on this is in terms of ending this absolute absurdity, but can you more fully articulate what DSA's stance is on this particular issue?
Yeah, so the DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group was also a party to the rate case. It's such a weird it's a weird term. Those rooms are not fun. It is not a party. Just a bunch of white guys in suit arguing about, you know, how much Con Ed's going to make. But so DSA, you know, put forth testimony in the beginning of the process to kind of, you know, try to go through the legal ways, like, you know, interact with the system and see if there's any, you know, reply. And, you know, pretty much everything that the Eco-Socialist Working Group has kind of was asked for was never really on the table. DSA even also asked for more public hearings and things like, you know, energy burden communities. That was all denied by the Public Service Commission and DPS. And so, you know, the Eco-Socialist Working Group is that, you know, this is a broken system that, you know, capitalism, these incremental plans, waiting for market mechanisms, we're never going to be able to solve climate change while working within this system. We're never going to be able to, you know, solve these problems if if so much of our energy system's decisions are based on how much money Con Ed shareholders get to make. You know, as long as that's part of the equation, we're never going to be able to actually build the energy system we need. So DSA has engaged in this campaign for public power, believing that, you know, there should be no Con Ed shareholders that have these decision-making powers, that it should be the people, and kind of exactly what that system would look like as public power, I think, is something that's still kind of being debated. They're doing a lot of outreach to people, just, you know, public power town halls. There'll be one in the Bronx coming up soon to get what the idea of what a system could look like that was actually controlled by the people. But the point is, like, they tried, you know, we've tried to kind of interact with this system and this legal framework and this department that's supposed to represent public interest. And, you know, kind of as you heard Sarah Lyon say, like, we're not going to be able to change the system. We need a completely different one. And that is public power, which is now, you know, a priority campaign for all of New York City DSA, not just the Eco-Socialist Working Group. And it's also something that's kind of being folded into this movement to fight for a Green New Deal.
Yeah, public power seems like it's the only rational solution to a problem created by these destructive private monopolies. So let's transition from one of these destructive private monopolies to another one. National Grid has also been in the news a lot lately. What is going on with National Grid?
Yeah, so National Grid is our other big corporate utility. They also have a current rate case on the table, but they've also been pushing for the Williams Pipeline, which is a pipeline to bring frack gas from Pennsylvania into New York City. And New Yorkers have vehemently said, no way, we don't want this, we don't want more gas. And New York State has temporarily denied that pipeline twice. And when it was denied last in May, National Grid kind of threw a temper tantrum and was like, well, fine, we're not going to hook up any new customers like out of the blue. And we do want people to stop getting new gas hookups and, you know, move to renewable energy. But they just kind of pulled the rug out from everyone, giving them no warning. So people who were building new homes, planning on getting gas, all of a sudden couldn't get gas. Businesses couldn't get gas. And then Governor Cuomo started kind of like puffing up his chest and being like, I'm going to stand up to National Grid, and actually threatened to revoke their license, which a lot of us who want public power were like, yes, that's exactly what you should be doing. But instead of revoking their license, there was another closed door settlement negotiation between the Public Service Commission and National Grid. And yesterday, Governor Cuomo announced that they've come up with the deal. And so the moratorium is ending magically after saying there was no gas. National Grid found gas, which is what, you know, the people fighting the Williams Pipeline have always been saying, that, you know, there was no gas shortage. We didn't actually need this pipeline. And so now they have to, for the next 2 years, they can continue to hook up people. And then over the next 3 months, they're supposed to come up with a plan about what the long-term goal is. And they still said a pipeline might be on the table. Trucking in gas through compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas is also on the table, which means, like, pretty much bomb trucks are going to be on our roads delivering gas to people. And then they talk a little bit about demand reduction and that kind of stuff, which is what we need to be doing. We need to be investing in using less gas and energy efficiency, and then installing heat pumps and geothermal. So there was this big announcement, you know, yesterday, but it's a pretty disappointing announcement. It doesn't make it clear that National Grid needs to stop using our money and investing it in gas infrastructure. It doesn't really lay forth a plan. And instead of putting the decisions back in the hands of the people, it's pretty much Cuomo just handed the reins back to National Grid and then had a bunch of people congratulate him in a press release about, you know, what a great leadership he showed over this this whole issue, you know.
So is this all related to the rate case that is going on?
So National Grid, just like Con Ed, wants to raise our rates, and it is related because, you know, there had been negotiations. They were kind of stalled a little bit during this moratorium, but now they'll pick back up. And I mean, as part of this plan that National Grid has to go forward is also this plan for a rate case. And so National Grid wants to, you know, pretty much do the same thing Con Ed does, but even more, because they're just in the gas business. You know, they don't have electricity and gas. They're just a gas company. You know, their entire shareholder profit is based on investing hundreds of millions of dollars in new gas infrastructure. They want to, just like Con Ed, replace leaking pipeline. And then they also want to build new pipelines. And so a huge part of their rate case is to spend almost $190 million. It's like $189.5 million of our ratepayer dollars. This is like, anytime you talk about them spending money, this is our money that they raise our rates to do. So they want to spend that on a pipeline that will, one, if they got the Williams pipeline, bring more gas into the city. But also they said, oh, it'll give us more reliability. We can take out other parts of the system. So they want to build this really large pipeline from Brownsville to Greenpoint. And a lot of it has already been built. And it just kind of got on our radar during this rate case that, oh, they're actually building part of this pipeline now through Bushwick. And so State Energy Project and State Senator Julia Salazar actually hosted a meeting last night in Bushwick to let the National Grid claims, like, oh, we're doing all this great outreach, and nobody had any idea. Like, my coworker Kim, who follows frack gas pipelines like for a living, had no idea a pipeline was being built two blocks from her house. So there was a meeting last night at Our Wicked Lady in Bushwick to kind of talk about that pipeline. And this is what State Senator Julia Salazar had to say about it.
It wasn't until I had already spoken out against this phase four, just a couple blocks away from here in Bushwick, where they're already beginning this construction, that they reached out to me with, you know, these talking points, sort of, I didn't mean this as a pun, but gaslighting, if you will, right? like telling us, you know, it's safe, it's necessary, right? These are the things that they will tell us to justify the expansion of natural gas infrastructure, when in the meantime we passed landmark climate justice legislation this year that is supposed, you know, we're supposed to already be, and it could be, you know, I don't want to just be like doom and gloom here, like it's like we needed to do this yesterday, you know what I mean? And we need to be doing it right now, and to be investing millions, tens of millions of dollars in additional gas infrastructure is the complete, it's completely counterintuitive. It is the opposite of what we need to be doing. And it's just, to add insult to injury, right? It's offensive that they want to increase your rates and our energy bills in order to pay for it while their shareholders, you know, just make more money off of it. So that's the end of my rant. thank you. I just want to thank all of you again for coming out and participating in this, and encourage you to get involved in this really powerful coalition, because the work that they're doing is transformative, and this is really an existential issue for all of us. Thanks.
That was DSA member State Senator Julia Salazar at a community meeting last night in Bushwick about the pipeline National Grid is constructing in North Brooklyn. You are listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about the local fights against fossil capital and the monopoly corporations that control our energy and charge you absurd rates to reproduce the same exact cycle of destruction that is really stampeding us towards a climate crisis that needs to be, the circumstances need to be changed. And I think I speak on behalf of a lot of people here at BAI in the sense that this is the sort of media institution that is actually fighting back against these forces, while corporate media does absolutely nothing to shine the light on the horrendous practices that fossil fuel capital continues to do because they receive advertising dollars from them. So please, you know, sign up to be a WBAI buddy of a show like ours, Revolutions Per Minute, where we're covering these sort of issues. You can do that by going to give the number 2 WBAI.org. Again, that's give 2 WBAI.org, or you can go to WBAI.org and also become a buddy that way as well. So we're going to open up the phone lines. We have about, you know, 10 minutes left in the show. So we'd love to hear from you, you know, call in and talk to us about these, either these specific struggles that are happening against fossil fuel capital, the broader climate change issues. If you're just interested in the work that DSA is doing, or if you want to talk about, you know, anything you want to discuss with us, you can call in at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. So while we wait to hear from our callers, Lee, what's next in the campaign to stop the pipeline in Bushwick?
Yeah, so it's a five-phase project to build this pipeline from Brownsville to Greenpoint. And so far, phase one through four was approved in National Grid's last rate case. We've been paying for it to be happening. So we do want to fight for phase five, which would be the point that would go through Greenpoint in the rate case. And so we're trying to stop it there. But also, this pipeline is already under construction. And kind of like I mentioned before, the whole system of engaging in this rate case, people's interests aren't really still being served. So I think there'll definitely be a lot of direct action probably to stop this. And just a lot of like educating people, because even though National Grid claims that they've been knocking on people's door, nobody knows about this. If you've been driving along Flushing Avenue in Bushwick, you've probably seen construction and not even realized what it is. So people can go to stenergyproject.org to get involved in that campaign. And, you know, we're just kind of in the beginning stages of letting people know, and I think this is going to be, you know, the community has to decide how they really want to respond to this pipeline, and
yeah,
we'll be doing that.
Yeah, I'd imagine National Grid does not want people to find out what's happening, because if they do, they'll get pissed and people will get organized, and it looks like we're starting to see that, and let's hope this continues to develop. We've got a caller. Hey, you're live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name? What's your comment or question?
Hi, good evening. My name is Carol from Muscat, Queens. I'm listening to that National Grid problem, and you guys against building new pipelines for the gas. But what are options of the people living in the city? We have only two ways to heat our houses, which is oil and the gas. And lately, people are switching from the oil to the gas, which is a cleaner source. Of course, it's not the best source, but cleaner source. And with that change, the demand for the gas is rising. So National Grid bringing more gas in the newer, safer pipeline is something that they have to do, because what would be our choice to do, or what? Stay with the oil, or how we can heat our houses?
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely want to, you know, push back a little bit on this idea that gas is cleaner. You know, one, the only way to get it out of the ground is to frack, which pollutes people's water, pollutes people's air. Also, it maybe doesn't, when it burns, there's less CO2, but like I said earlier, it's leaking all this methane throughout the entire process. So the actual greenhouse gas impacts are actually worse than oil and coal. And then you also have where this gas is coming from in the Marcellus Shale. It's a very radioactive shale form. And we know that Con Ed and National Grid are actually not testing for radon or any of the things that radon breaks down to in our gas. So we don't know how safe this gas is that's even coming into our homes. And the idea that we only have a choice between oil and gas is the problem right now. That's because the fossil fuel industry has had this subsidized so much. And actually, we have former Mayor Bloomberg to thank for a lot of that. He, for a very long time, pushed this lie that he's now admitted is wrong, that gas is cleaner than oil, at the same time while very much benefiting, you know, financially from the development of gas. So what we need to heat our homes is we need geothermal and we need air source heat pumps. And that stuff is all technologically possible. We just need our government to actually fund it. And as we're paying our bills every month, there's actually a fund that goes to renewable energy. And a lot of that money is just sitting there. You know, the New York Green Bank has money. NYSERDA has money. We've actually already been chipping into this fund. And so it shouldn't be up to individuals to have to buy their way out of the system. We really need New York State to commit to funding the renewable heating solutions like air source heat pumps, geothermal, the same way that they have been subsidizing oil to gas conversions on our dime for the last, you know, six years or so now.
Yeah, I think it's really critical to recognize that this is not a technological question. It's not that there are the lack of resources or capacity to make this shift in terms of our technological capabilities. Those discoveries have been made. It is possible to make this transition. It is about power. Is that the fossil fuel industry is one of the most powerful institutions in the world. They control certain state apparatuses. So this is about a necessary collective struggle against that power to shift the power away from concentrated ownership of energy of fossil fuels and shift that to collective ownership of renewable energies. But I really want to thank you very much for that call, because I think you brought up a question in a frame that a lot of people probably think about this issue. And I think it's important for people committed to an eco-socialist transformation to really debunk that line of thinking. Reggie, do we have another? Hey, we've got another caller live on WBAI. You're on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your name? What's your question or comment?
Yes, you can hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Good. I'm calling from here in New York City. It's a very simple way of demonstrating, if you would, the total corruption of the current governor, of Andrew Cuomo. And that has to do with electricity on Long Island in Nassau and Suffolk, but also in a part of New York City, in part of Queens in the Rockaways, which were also supplied by what was at one time the Lilco private company that I'm sure the guest knows very much about. Lilco, which went virtually bankrupt in trying to force the Shoreham nuclear disaster upon us, went $5 billion in debt on that. And its debt was taken over by we 20 million New Yorkers through a public energy utility called LIPA, the Long Island Power Authority, owned by the people of New York State, no private profit, doing a perfectly fine job in the two counties out on Long Island and in the Rockaways. Suddenly, the governor, the current governor of the state, decided that there was a gift he wanted to make to a private New Jersey corporation called PSE&G, and he took the public property and gifted it to a corporation very much friendly to Chris Christie, who was governor at the time. And that corporation now charges whatever it wants to and takes whatever profits it wants to out of the two counties, out of Long Island and out of the Rockaways, and pays whatever small taxes it pays, not to Albany, but to Trenton right now. This is the Andrew Cuomo. It's the same Andrew Cuomo who is involved with privatizing, for instance, Belmont Raceway, Belmont State Park, in order to gift that to some other friends of his in the railroad and in the professional sports business, the virtual privatization of Aqueduct Raceway as well, which was public property. But more specifically to the energy discussion, Indian Point is not, you know, the newest clean energy, geothermal, which you mentioned, wind energy, even the energy of the tides. But Indian Point is there and is verified a certain degree of reliability, if you would. It's Andrew Cuomo who decided, without citing any particular reason, why that's going to be shut down right now and costing us something like 25% of our total energy supply, forcing us to therefore give the contracts to the gas pipelines crossing the mouth of the New York Harbor again and coming into Queens and all that kind of stuff. Andrew Cuomo is as crooked as they come.
We definitely agree with that. On Revolutions Per Minute, Andrew Cuomo has definitely been in our crosshairs throughout our almost year of being on the air. Thank you very much for that call. We've got time for just one last brief comment from a caller. You are live on Revolutions Per Minute. Please keep it brief. What's your name and what's your comment or question?
Hi, my name's Tim. I'm calling from New Jersey. And my comment is that you absolutely did not answer that guy's question about what is he supposed to do if he's not going to have oil or gas.
He said geothermal.
He went into long-term programs and this and that and the other thing. We're talking in the next year or two. What's he supposed to do if he's not going to do that?
Well, let me thank you for your question. And I think the fact that this question is asked is kind of really highlights how much people have been indoctrinated in neoliberal ideology. What he personally does is not of importance. This is a large scale issue. It is a societal, social issue. It is a power struggle. So what if he wants to do something, what he should do is get involved in collective organizing. So that's how you deal with the issue. It's not about your personal consumer choices. That's not what climate change has to do. That's not how you deal with climate change, is doing things on the personal level. It's about social change. So we've got to wrap up, but Lee, can you just let people know how they can get involved before we go?
Yeah, definitely. So there is this campaign, as you're saying, that to take over the bigger system, to create public power for New York City, so we're not relying on these, crazy market solutions that don't work for anybody in capitalism. So the DSA Eco-Socialists will be hosting a public power town hall in the Bronx on December 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. It's at the Alterton Branch Library. If you follow the DSA Eco-Socialists, you can find more information on that, learn about the big pipeline that Con Ed wants to build through the Bronx and what those people want. Also, Con Edison will be having hearings on their rate case coming up. So on December 11th at 6:30 p.m., you can tell the Public Service Commission exactly what you think of Con Ed's plan to raise our rates. That's going to be at the SUNY Global Center on 116th East 55th Street. You can also send comments on both the Con Ed and National Grid rate case coming up. If you go to sayanenergyproject.org, we have a utilities button that you can comment on. But yeah, the most important thing is taking over the system so we're not dependent on capitalism's choices of oil or gas.
I think that's a perfect way to end the episode. Those sound like really great events. Thank you so much for our listeners and our callers for joining us. We'll be back next week, Tuesday at 5. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute, and we'll talk to you then.